You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, friends. Glad you could make it. I'm grateful you're here. Today, I'll talk about what's happening in Mexico, the Olympics, the Winter Olympics over there in Milan. I'll talk about the Mannings from New Orleans. We were there last week. I'll talk some baseball, some aliens, robots. And for the rest, I will find out when you do. We'll see where this goes. We're going to go with the flow, is what they call that. And as you know, I tend to meander. But hopefully we'll both get something out of this. First, let's start with something funny to set the tone, as I like to do. Sometimes I try to create my own funnies, which I did last week. I crafted this clever little text message for the group chat. And after I had written it, I sent it to the wife and asked her to text it to me. And before she did that, I changed her name in my phone to the nickname of this buddy of mine in the group chat. And you can steal it if you love it. I'm sure I probably stole the idea from somebody myself. before I do that, I want to share this interesting tidbit that I read one time. Because when I apply this filter, this lens through which to view my own life, it rang true. And I want you to see if it does for you too. So you know how dudes, when they're with their buddies, they like to give each other shit, but they don't mean it. And then women do the same with compliments. They compliment each other and they don't mean it either. Well, my buddies have clowned each other about being gay ever since we laid eyes on our first set of Tigos. You know what I mean? So last week, I sent this in the group chat. Again, this is written as if it's coming from a buddy of mine, of ours, in the chat who is divorced, because I acted as though it came from his phone, as if he sent it to me. And it reads, "Being divorced at 43 isn't easy. So many gay guys think they're slick, but they're not. What they do is subtly try to test the waters to see if you're one of them, in a way that can be played off as a joke, like you're reading into something that isn't there. But there's a reason they choose their words so carefully. It's like they're putting a little bait on the hook to see if you bite. And it can be tricky because after a few drinks, they'll look at you with a gleam in their eye and lightly touch you, like on your arm, for example. And then later that night, they'll ask if you want to switch because they like being a bottom. And it's all just to see if you're one of them. But I'm telling you, man, it's a trick. Do not fall for it." So we had fun with that one. I do have a few funny internet posts I can share. One is from the account who goes by Greg with a bunch of numbers behind it. He has a very popular account. Last I checked, he had 1.4 million followers. And this is in keeping with the theme of one of last week's funnies, the one that said, "I wonder if glass coffins will someday be a thing, remains to be seen." Well, this one says, "Just found out the company that makes yardsticks won't be making them any longer." And of course, you always have some literal autists in the replies, or literalist autist, to be more precise. Somebody replied, they said, "That's wild. Do you think it's because of supply chain issues or just phasing them out?" And Greg said, "Guessing it's just because of the way it is." That one's a six, but this one's better. This is courtesy of Lloyd Legalist. He asks, "Do you think the guy that coined the term one-hit wonder ever came up with any other popular phrases?" Incognito 3 had a few good ones. He says, "If you have a gambling addiction, do not let it win. You must get your money back." And another one, in light of what's going down in Mexico, he said, "The cartel kind of gay for caring about a man this much." As I said, I was in New Orleans last week for Mardi Gras. We caught the Iris and Tux parades on St. Charles Avenue. For those of you not familiar with New Orleans, St. Charles is the famous street in New Orleans, lined with giant oak trees and a lot of old money mansions. And it's where the streetcar rides. And Lula's, which is where we watched the parade, it's owned by the best friend of one of my best friends, or actually the best friend of my college roommate. And what's crazy about that is my childhood best friend roomed with this guy, if that makes sense. So my roommate's best friend in high school turned out to be my childhood best friend's roommate at LSU, a totally different school. Isn't that wild? So anyway, we watched it at Lula's. This guy, Jess, he's one of the owners. And it's in the Garden District, which is where Archie Manning lives, where they raised Peyton and Eli. And Cooper, too. Cooper, they had three sons, who they used to say was the best athlete of the three of them. But he was diagnosed, Cooper was, with spinal stenosis before what was to be his freshman year at Ole Miss. Spinal stenosis is narrowing of the spinal canal. And I always thought, because Peyton and Eli seem to be stand-up guys, I'll bet they just say that Cooper was the best athlete of the three of them because he had this career-ending injury. But the fact that he was a wide receiver and not a quarterback, he probably, if you're a wideout, I mean, he probably was the best athlete, especially if he was good enough to play at Ole Miss. You know, when I was a kid, growing up as a Saints fan, Archie Manning was talked about in the same legendary terms as Drew Brees, as Drew Brees is now. Although I do think Breesus obviously has surpassed anything Archie was able to do in his Saints career. And he ran for over 2,000 yards, Archie Manning, I'm talking about. When I was 10, and this is during All-Star baseball season, we played at Carrollton Park, which is at the end of St. Charles Avenue, a few blocks away, in what rappers used to call the UPT, Uptown. And I was looking forward to playing there because you only get to play there once when you're 10. And we all looked forward to it because they had a Fenway monster, like a Fenway Park type monster in left field. But I was left-handed, so there were slim odds of me trying to take one deep to left, you know, oppo at that age. And my Pawpaw Fats, who I talked about last episode, he was going to come watch the game. And that was the first, I want to say that was the first and only time he ever saw me play baseball. He died when I was 12. And he sat in a lawn chair on the fence right behind the plate. Like, he was maybe 8 feet from me. And I remember being so dialed in because he was there. And I got a fastball up in the zone in my first at bat, and I hit one deep to center field that probably would have been a home run in any other little league park, any other park for 10-year-olds at least. But with this monster in left, the field went to a point in center field, kind of like the Polo Grounds or Braves Field, which is actually where Fats made his major league debut, September 18th, 1944. Thank you, Internet. I want to say Braves Field was 520 feet to dead center. So anyway, I think I definitely got a triple out of it. And I share that story because after the game, some of the parents were saying that Archie Manning was on the big kids' field behind ours, watching his son. And so I gave one of the moms my baseball glove to get it autographed. And that was back when people did autographs and not selfies. So the rest of that season, I played baseball with Archie Manning's autograph on my glove. So what's funny about that is he was there watching Cooper, who, because I was 10, so Cooper's the oldest of Peyton, Eli, and of the three of them. So he would have been, what, 16 or 17. And Archie probably had Peyton and Eli sitting there next to him. But the parents were walking over to get Archie to sign stuff. And this story would probably be better if we had gotten his kids' autographs instead. Something that my buddies and I have discussed as parents is, with all the prosperity of our times, how do you avoid spoiling your kids? And I always bring up the Mannings. There was no bigger deal than Archie in New Orleans. And because he played for the Saints and he had NFL money, obviously, more than you and I will likely ever have. So how would he do that? How would he handle it? How would he avoid turning his sons into spoiled brats? Well, he emphasized things like character and humility and family values and continuous personal growth. Instead of putting all this undue pressure on them and buying them a bunch of stuff and getting them hooked on materialism, he prioritized being a good man more than material success. And the mom, Mrs. Manning, she has said that she focused on raising happy and productive, good sort of kids. And Archie has said that he hugged him every day and he told him that he loved him. And I have seen where Drew Brees has said the same thing. He tells his kids he loves them every day and that they can accomplish anything they want if they're just willing to work hard. Here's a parenting tip I stumbled into if your kids aren't into hugging you. My daughter was not a cuddler at all from birth. She's always been a squirmer. Well, now she gives the best hugs in the world. And I think it's because I don't call it a hug. I call it a squeeze. So she's always trying to one-up herself with every hug. She wants to know that, well, first she wants to know if it's a good one. And then she'll ask, was it better than last time? So our hugs just get better and better. So we watched the parade in front of this Lula's on St. Charles. Lula's Restaurant and Distillery. It's really good if you want to check out a cool place in New Orleans. And I got to see my old college roommate, as I said, whose best friend from high school is one of the owners. It's right down the street. So we walked down, must have been 3 or 4 blocks. We walked down to the Real World house. You remember the Real World? Which we probably all liked a little bit too much because I'm thinking if the Real World hadn't been so popular, we might still get music videos on music television. Instead, we get RuPaul's Drag Hour or something. Anybody know if they play Real World reruns? Bueller? I don't know. That's something worth Googling. I'll Google it later. This is the true story. True story of seven strangers picked to live in a house. You remember? That was good. It was such a good show initially. And then Theo Vaughn was on Road Rules. I think I had stopped watching by then. But let's talk about the Winter Olympics. How much would you pay to do the skeleton? Did anybody see the skeleton? I had never seen that before. It's like the luge, but you ride on your stomach. And it looks so fun. And I was actually wondering how many people can access this stuff, like a luge track. Where can you go to practice to become an Olympian? And how deep is the field? Like, if you're going to represent America, are there a lot of losers out there who didn't make the cut? Like, how many? Like, maybe guys who were all state in high school, but after putting on the freshman 15, they couldn't compete any longer. I don't know. Like, where do these people come from? And I was curious. So I looked it up. So you don't have to. Or maybe you already knew. I don't know. If so, you can fast forward this a minute and I'll be talking about robots and the cartel and all that. But first off, there are only 4 luge tracks in the U.S. They are located in Park City, Utah, Lake Placid, New York, and 2 more in Michigan. And they can accommodate all 3, luge, skeleton, and the bobsled. And I'll tell you the difference between them. With the luge, you lie on your back and you go feet first. You can either go solo or in pairs. The skeleton, which is what I want to do, you ride face down, head first, and that can only be done solo. And then the bobsled, which they now have a team from Jamaica, you're sitting inside a big sled and you can ride up to 4 at a time. So that's the difference. I really liked watching the half pipe too. And I learned that there are only 3 half pipes in America, 3 Olympic-sized half pipes, anyway, which are 22 feet. And those are in, well, 2 of them are in Colorado, Copper Mountain and Breckenridge, and the other is in Mammoth Mountain, California. I had some friends I just saw on Facebook who went to Copper Mountain during the week of Mardi Gras, so I didn't get to see a lot of them while I was down there because they were skiing, which is when I was a kid, that's what the... Only the rich kids did that. When I was a kid, people just get tired of Mardi Gras, and the families who skied generally tended to have a lot of money. But it speaks to the prosperity of our times, I guess, that we're all kind of doing it now. And maybe I'll talk about that a little more later. I've never skied in my life, but I'd like to try as soon as I get my neck right. Do you know how much of gold medals is made of actual gold? It is about 8%. The rest is made of silver. And because the price of gold and silver are so high right now, if you wanted to melt your metal down and take it to down there at the pawn shop, you probably wouldn't feel sublime doing it. You know what I mean? R.I.P. to the best Bradley. Buh, buh. Some of you understand that reference because you like Sublime too. They were popular when I was in high school, which they say is the music that will resonate with you most throughout the rest of your life. that holds for most people because the emotions are so high and you play good music when your emotions are high. And anyway, you remember it. But that's from Waiting for My Ruka, RIP to the best Bradley. Or you're not the only one, but you're the best Bradley. Buh, buh. 40 ounces to freedom. Ruka is Mexican-American slang for, it's like saying my old lady, my Ruka. And that's why you can't keep old lady, because you keep messing with her friends, huh? Or maybe it's Spanish slang, Spanglish. All right, that digression is done. So how much are gold medals worth on the open market? That's what I was getting to. Let's say if you won a gold medal and you fell on hard times and you needed to sell it, how much do you think you'd get? Answer, $2,300 to $2,500. But they often sell at auction for $50,000 to up to more than $100,000. Do you remember Greg Louganis, the American diver who won gold? Again, this is going back to my childhood. I can remember being 8 years old and diving off the diving board and yelling, Greg Louganis. Well, he sold all three of his Olympic medals at auction just last year. Well, I don't know if it was all of them, but I think it was. And he sold them for a total of $430,000. Two golds, one silver. He sold them together. He won the gold one in 88. That one was in Seoul, South Korea. And he got $201,000 for that gold medal. His other gold that he won in 1984 at the Olympics held in Los Angeles, which I vaguely remember because I had a poster of the LA Olympics and it said 1984 on my wall as a kid. And my brother and I both had one, but I don't know that I remember any specific events or sports. But that one, Louganis sold for $199,000. He said he had to sell them because he needed the money. So he sold his medals. He sold his house. I think he lived in California. And he said that he wanted to start a new chapter in his life. And he moved to Panama. And that's not even the most interesting thing about Greg Louganis. He came out as gay in 1995 when he announced that he had contracted HIV from his partner, who later died of AIDS. Louganis, he was able to treat his disease a la Magic Johnson, which is something I thought about when I was volunteering in Africa with kids who were born with HIV, because those drugs, antiretrovirals, they call them, those drugs are not cheap. But I learned that we were helping. The U.S. was helping and giving them some aid. And in fact, the administrative office at this school where we taught was located about 40 miles outside of Lusaka. And I mean, it was desolate. We had to go over these bumpy roads and you see poverty and straw huts everywhere. Lusaka is the capital of Zambia. And there was a picture in this administrative office of George W. Bush. He had just visited there like a few months before, or maybe a couple, I'm not sure when, maybe a year before. It was crazy to me because I had no idea. But those drugs have gotten dramatically cheaper through the years, mostly thanks to generics, which that's another thing that was kept out of the news through the whole Nancy Guthrie thing, was the Trump lowering prescription drug prices. But what used to cost $12,000 a year to treat HIV or $1,000 a month, now you can get generic equivalents for $40 a year, I think it is. The most lucrative sale of a gold medal was Jesse Owens' gold medal from 1936. That was the Olympics hosted by the Nazis in Berlin. Remember when Hitler looked like he was on some uppers? That gold medal sold for $1.4 million. And Owens is often considered the best athlete ever. And the most interesting story from that Olympics, I think, was Owens making a mockery of all the Nazi racial propaganda, because Jesse Owens was a black dude. And Hitler afterward he didn't stick around to congratulate him. He just took off. But safe to say, this is what I'm thinking. If you've never contracted HIV or you weren't good at entering the water without a splash from a high dive, or you were, if you were an Olympian in a year that Hitler didn't host it, you're probably only going to get 50 to 100 for your gold. And what can you do with that money? Well, one thing you could do is buy an Optimus, because the robots are coming to everywhere near you pretty soon. And the price of a personal robot that I have seen floating around, the estimated price is going to be $30,000, which I'm sure that'll get cheaper over time, just like a Tesla. Tesla is the one making Optimus. I imagine one of those U.S. hockey players could sell their gold for a lot of money, though. Was that incredible? Or, I mean, that was so awesome to beat Canada of all states, or to beat our 51st state of all countries. I saw Matt Walsh had a good thought on this. He said, The sense I get from watching my first ever hockey game is that the championship games are incredibly exciting in a way that Super Bowls often aren't. But some random regular season hockey game would be excruciatingly boring in a way that a random regular season football game rarely is. Yeah. It was the first gold since the Miracle on Ice for the U.S. men's hockey team. And women also won gold. And then Trump called. Did you see that? Trump called them and invited them to the State of the Union Tuesday night. I'm recording this on Monday, if you're curious. Should we get into the best? Well, that I was going to say, should we get into the best movie ever? That is kind of best movie ever stuff too, right? Can you believe there's something every day, it seems like, that's happening that makes us feel like we're watching the best movie ever? I want to give you a few things to consider before robots begin to proliferate everywhere. Got a stutter today. You notice that? It's like my lip gets stuck. And that's something I've noticed about speaking Spanish. It's like your mouth has to be, you can't have a dry mouth and roll your R's. And so I always wonder how they're able to do that. Like sometimes I have to lick my lips before I start speaking Spanish. Is that, I need to Google around and ask about that. Or I can ask my wife, I guess. But the few things I wanted you to consider. So I'm sure you've noticed Bitcoin's price has taken a pretty rapid nosedive here lately. It's down 25% year to date, down over 30% the last year. And last I saw, again, I'm recording this on Monday, it sits at about $64,000 a coin. But gold, by contrast, as you probably know, has done extremely well. But something I wonder is what would happen to the price of gold, which is up 17% year to date, over 70% over the past year, over 70%. What would happen if you tasked 100,000 robots or a million robots even with the task of discovering new gold if they went digging for gold? And I'm not talking about a finger in the robo nostril, which, by the way, supposedly the reason that they're taking so long to develop these robots is because hands and fingers are so hard to do, which I find fascinating because hands are said to be the hardest thing to draw or paint. And that's, I don't know, it's just like hand of God stuff where you can't replicate it. I just find that so interesting. But you know why that is? I looked it up the other day because I was curious, like, why is it so hard to draw hands? Well, and then I've got some reasons here. The first reason is because we have 27 different bones in our hands, and then we got joints and ligaments and tendons and all that. And then we have the palm, which isn't flat. So being flat helps not only gymnasts, but artists, evidently. And then your fingers, they're not uniformly cylindrical, which is a fancy way of saying they're all different lengths, and some are fat and some are skinny, and you can flex them or stretch them or curl them, and that's going to increase the complexity when you're trying to draw or paint a hand or trying to build a robot too, I guess. The second reason hands are hard to draw is the range of motion. The fact that you can twist them and grip something, you could point, and you can take your hand and contort it in 1,000 different ways. Make a fist. There's a lot of things you can do with your hand. The third reason, and I've got to read this one here because I'm not sure I've ever heard this phrase in my life. I think I've got a list of phrases I'm going to share with you a little later. The third reason it's hard to draw hands is something called foreshortening nightmares, which is when fingers point toward or away from the observer, which is common in natural poses. It says here, perspective squashes and overlaps forms in tricky ways, so it's easy to misjudge lengths. It's easy to misjudge joint placement or finger thickness, making the hand look stubby, elongated, or broken. All right, just two more. The fourth reason a hand is hard to copy or mimic is high expectations for proportion and detail. So because we look at hands all the time, especially our own, some of us have a better relationship with Rosie than others do, but because of this familiarity, we know how a hand is supposed to look. So even if there's this little tiny error, like in the alignment of your knuckles, for example, or the opposable thumbs look off, it stands out like a sore one, he can't lift the seat, Fokker. He lacks, what is it? He lacks opposable thumbs. Come on, Fokker. And last but not least, there's a psychological component to it. So since we use our hands every day, we have strong muscle memory of how they're supposed to operate. But less so do we have visual memory of their exact 3D form for all the different angles that are possible. And so that leads to what's known as symbol drawing, which is just drawing what you think a hand's supposed to look like instead of what you actually see. And even the most masterful artists ever, like Michelangelo and Leonardo, Master Splinter, Da Vinci and Michelangelo, they had sketchbooks because they were always full of hand studies, because they were always studying hands because they wanted to get them right. So it took a lot of study and understanding to understand the anatomy of a hand. You ever wonder why we shake hands with our right hand? I remember a lot of people, this is probably before the internet, but a lot of people used to think that it had to do with ancient times, that people would wipe their butt with their left hand, so would then offer their clean hand to greet you. But that is not true. The real reason that people shake hands is because, or shake with their right hand, is because way back, it was a gesture of peace and trust. And the reason for that is you were signaling that the dominant hand, or what they called the weapon hand, didn't have anything in it. So for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, two men shaking their right hands just ensured that that neither of you had a sword or a dagger that you could kill them with. Plus, what is it? 13% of the population is left-handed? It's the same percentage as African Americans in our great country, the U.S. of A. So you're just as likely to be black as you are a Southpaw, which means the odds of being both black and left-handed. Let's do that math. 0.13 times 0.13. I should probably be able to do this without a calculator, but 1.6%. Those are the odds of you being both black and left-handed. There's some pretty impressive names on that list. Barack Obama is left-handed. Martin Luther King, he was a lefty. Trump's new bestie, Cardi B, is a lefty. And Jimi Hendrix. Most of y'all you can listen to Jimmy, but you can't hear Jimmy. That's white men can't jump. You ever think about if it weren't for us having ears, how we wouldn't perceive sound? Which to me, that's wholly different from like if a tree fell in the forest and nobody's around, would it make a sound? I'm more talking about like the fact that we perceive sound makes me wonder what other organs were missing. Like if you can call an ear an organ. I think it's an organ, right? Yeah, sensory organ. What other senses are we missing? Like, what other sensory organs do we lack to perceive all kinds of other stuff in our environment? Like, don't the sharks navigate the oceans by electrical fields or something? Or bats? What do bats do? How do they move? They sleep during the day, right? And they stink so bad. We have a little bat colony here in Houston under a bridge, and that you walk over that bridge and it reeks bad. Echolocation, that's what they call it. But enough about that. We were talking about robots and gold. Oh, I wanted to talk about digging for gold, literal gold. What would happen to the price of gold if robots were to go west? Go west, young man. You know, that was the gold rush. They went west. If they did it in 2029, San Francisco might have to rename its football team. They're called the 49ers because of the gold rush in 1849, but they'd have to call them the Santa Clara 29ers. The value of gold today is somewhere around $5,000 an ounce. I haven't looked at it since last week, but it's somewhere around $5,000. It's valuable because of its scarcity. But if you had a million robots working tirelessly to find more gold, and I say tirelessly because I assume they wouldn't get tired, like we plebs. And by plebs, I mean humans. I'm sure we're going to be an underclass at some point, thanks to our overlords, the AI robots. But either by underwater dredging or they could deep sea drill, they could be doing that around the clock and we just keep going and going. Wouldn't that cause the value of gold to plummet? I think it would. And if they're going to keep going, what would keep them from exploring the ocean blue? There's so much ocean on this planet that is yet to be explored. But what happens if you get a million robots deep sea diving? Because presumably they wouldn't need to breathe, huh? And they could just build it to withstand the pressure, and who knows what they'd find down there. And the same would go for Greenland or the Congo, the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, birthplace of Mutombo. Who wants to sex Mutombo? The Congo has all the cobalt reserves, which is what we use. Well, that and lithium are what we use to, that's what you use to make electric vehicles and all the, our iPhones and stuff. That's by far the biggest cobalt reserve in the Congo. They could just put robots over there. The biggest lithium reserves are in Chile and Australia, I believe. I imagine someday soon the robots are going to be digging up for rare earth minerals, as they're now called. That's a phrase that that phrase has been put into overdrive with Ukraine and Greenland and all that. But that way, the robots can give their offspring new life, because I assume they're going to replicate each other, huh? Who knows? The future is unknowable. Let's talk about... All right, time for the best movie ever. Did you see where Obama was asked if there were aliens? And he said yes, but that he hadn't seen them, and that they weren't in Area 51, which is in New Mexico. Then Trump said that he wasn't supposed to share that, but that maybe he'll get him out of trouble and declassify all the alien stuff. That, best movie ever. I actually don't think they have much to share. You know, they're always talking about biologics, which leads people to think that there are these alien-looking creatures buried somewhere that we captured after they crashed their UFO or UAP, whatever we're calling them now. But biologics, that just means, like, I'll give you an example of a biologic. Insulin is a biologic. Stem cells, something I know too much about, are a biologic. Even bacteria, those are all biologics. So I could see them sharing that they found some biologic, some cell or protein or something without, and then just leaving it a mystery. Like they don't give us any further explanation. We'd have to interpret it for ourselves, like with all these documents that are being released with Epstein or even the JFK files. I mean, that story died pretty quickly, right? Also, what was the other story I wanted to, the Supreme Court. So they ruled against Trump's tariffs. So I imagine he's just going to do what the last guy did, the last guy we had in office, and then just do what he wants to do anyway. I don't know. Remember, the same court ruled against Biden when Biden wanted to erase everybody's student loan debt. And Biden was like, tell him to pound sand. I'm going to do what I want. I'm serious. It's not a joke. And it wasn't. He did it. I remember AOC saying in 2023, she said, it's up to the Biden administration whether they want to enforce the court's ruling. And I think the administration should ignore it. And that's what he did. But Trump, on the other hand, what would you say? He's naturally anti-racist, anti-authoritarian, anti a whole bunch of things they try to say that he is. You remember during COVID when he let the states manage themselves? Such an authoritarian move. And then those run by communists did what communists do. And we had Animal Farm come to life, where everybody's equal, but Gavin and Pelosi were more equal than others, dining out maskless in Napa Valley, and Pelosi was getting her hair did, all while the peasantry had to keep their hair nappy. And they arrested a paddle boarder in Malibu. It was nuts. And of course, they had the great exodus, which I think there's about to be another one. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. But it does look like Trump's going to find a way to get what he wants on the tariff thing. on Saturday night, there was another assassination attempt on our president, which makes him an even more sympathetic figure, right? It's hard to be like the alpha dog and a sympathetic figure, right? But he is accomplishing what I always say, our grandkids, our great-grandkids aren't going to believe Trump was real. The core of leftism is jealousy and envy. And back when we were a more religious country, we understood envy to be one of the seven deadly sins, which we now just call it social justice, right? But it's envy. It's gross. It's jealousy. Like in California with this wealth tax debate, they want to take 5% of rich people's money. And for what? What do you think they're going to do with it besides enrich themselves by way of NGOs claiming to help the homeless or the unhoused, as they call them? You know why they do that, right? It's the same thing with undocumented. If they're undocumented, well, we've got to get them documented so they can start a program, which is just a front for confiscating more money for themselves. These aren't taxes. These are confiscations. So they enrich themselves and their friends. They're like, hey, Jim, you should start an NGO. Call it Houses for Hungry People. And we'll seed it with $10 million tax dollars and tell your wife she can be director, salary $500,000. Okay, I'll do that, but what happens if we solve the problem? Is she going to have to find another job? No, Jim, you dummy. We're not problem solvers, we're communists. Do you think we put this mediocre lesbian to lead the second largest city in America because of her work ethic? Do you think Karen Bass shows up to work early in the morning and burns the midnight oil and like skips lunch? Or does she show up to work late, have a 2.5 martini lunch, and go home early? Which do you think? You think she's burning the midnight oil because she's looking out for the folks of the Los Angeles community? Or think about Kamala Harris. Like, speaking of martini lunches, what do you think her work ethic is like? Are you like me in that when I hear Kamala or AOC speak, I get this image in my head of the people who've told her what to say? It's like watching their recall. Like their recall is entirely them thinking about what they were told. And there's just no original thought there, and you can tell. But think about the people you know with the best work ethic. Are there any childless 60-year-old women that come to mind? No, of course not. I think they work about as hard as Biden did as president. Communists, I don't think, like to govern because it's work. Governing is the work part. Remember when Kamala took a month off during her campaign? So Biden dropped out July 21st, and then she finally does a public interview. What was it? August? It was right at the end of August, the 29th or something. So what, 38 days or almost 40 days? And that was when she brought Walz out to sit next to her for that interview with Dana Bash. She chose Walz over Buttigieg because she thought that he was too gay. So she decided on somebody closeted, I guess. And then she loses and writes a book called 107 Days when she probably should have called it 77 Days. So what do they do instead of working? Your guess is as good as mine, but I sure would like to shadow one of those folks just to see what their day is like. Because being mayor is supposed to just be a glorified administrative job, which is, I guess, how they can take vacations to Africa while they're city burns. I don't know, but maybe they come up with new genders in their spare time. Oh, I wanted to talk about some words and phrases that they've invented. I think I talked about this already, but I made a list, like legal observer, or I've talked about cisgender and equity. I just mentioned undocumented, but then there's also intersectionality and microaggressions and trigger warnings and safe spaces. It all came out of academia, climate change instead of global warming, heteronormative, my truth and your truth, lived experience, I guess, as opposed to the experience you get when you're not amongst the living. All right, let's talk about the cartels. I made a few notes here, which I understand all the cartel mess a little more than I should or wish that I did. But what you need to know, if you've never bought drugs from them, or they've never wanted to kill you, is that they are the most ruthless. These people are animals. They are the most ruthless creatures on the planet. They will just as soon torture you and have your head in an ice chest without a second thought. So the two places in the world I've visited where I was most, it was most, the most eye-opening experience, or I was most shocked to learn how little they value human life, that was in Africa and then Mexico. The cartels during the 4 years of the Biden administration got unbelievably rich because they had a hand in every single human trafficked across the border. They had their hands in all of that. And we're talking millions of people, of course. And something like 350,000 kids were trafficked. And women and girls were raped and sold into sex slavery. And it should be the biggest scandal in the history of our country. But I don't know if you noticed, the media is not even talking about what's going on in Mexico, the mainstream media. You've got to get it from alternative sources, and I think there's a reason for that. But the average that the average price paid to hire these cartel coyotes, those are the guys that smuggle humans, it was minimum $7,000. And they've since raised their prices significantly with all the securing of our border. So from what I understand now, it's more like $18,000 a head. So they make a lot of money trafficking humans, and they also, they have a hand, of course, in every dose of fentanyl that came across our border, our southern and northern borders. And as I've shared, in 2024, for the first time in my life, I was a one-issue voter. I wanted all the fentanyl deaths to stop. Even if I was a TDS-addled Dem, I would have had to risk the prospect of Hitler taking power and ending democracy as we know it in the U.S. and vote for the mean orange man, because that needed to stop. And when you see it up close, you would have been a one-issue voter too. Now, the difference between Sinaloa and Jalisco is, unlike El Chapo, who had escaped from prison twice through tunnels, Jalisco's leader wasn't a celebrity. So you remember El Chapo was doing interviews with Sean Penn, and that he was like a cult of personality until he was finally caught for good and expedited to the U.S., thank God, or expediently extradited. How about that? But do you realize, I don't think I realized this until a few days ago, or maybe yesterday, that we got El Chapo less than 24 hours before Trump took office in 2017. Did you know that? It kind of reminds me of the hostages in Iran. Remember, they were released just minutes before Ronald Reagan was sworn in 81. Also, Sinaloa has been around a lot longer. So they've been bad guys since the 80s. But this Jalisco, new generation, they call it, that's basically a startup by comparison. They started, 2010, 16 years ago, and they grew their ranks incredibly fast, mainly by just being more violent than all the other cartels. They don't just fight the government, which is who Sinaloa is. That's where most of their focus is. The Jalisco, the CJNG, they call it, they would wreak havoc on other cartels. Politicians. I'm sure you've heard about all the politicians that have been killed in the last few years, and even civilians. Fortunately, there aren't that many tourists in the state of Jalisco. I mean, there are in Puerto Vallarta, obviously, which I'd be scared to be there right now. I had to, in the last 24 hours, I've had to scratch it off the list of potential retreat sites. That's where I was. That was number one on the list, actually, Puerto Vallarta. So we did it in Costa Rica last year. But we're not going there now. I actually have a buddy, my friend who came to Mardi Gras with us. He was planning to go to Puerto Vallarta in the coming months, but luckily he hadn't booked it yet. So I don't think he'll be doing that. But the scariest part about this guy dying, the leader, what is it, El Mencho, or I forget his name. Again, he wasn't a celebrity, so we didn't even know his name. But they don't have a clear line of succession with the Jalisco cartel. So his son, who they call El Menchito, you know how they add Ito to everything when it's small, chiquitos, like little kids. The sun is already in a supermax here in the U.S. So from what I understand, there are four or five guys that are vying to be the next El Jefe, which means the boss. And I'm pretty sure a bloodbath is coming soon. Scary. Well, actually, Sinaloa didn't have a ready successor either. And that's why the Sinaloa cartel has been fragmented in since 24. And that's what's turned a lot of towns in northern Mexico into a war zone. I saw where they even have a shelter in place right now for Americans in Quintana Roo, which is the Yucatan, like Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Cozumel, Tulum, Akumal. They're all caught up in this too. They set 7 cars on fire in Playa yesterday. Again, I'm recording this on Monday. Somebody named Benjamin on X said that everyone talked about cartel brutality, but they've never faced an enemy that owns the night, sky, and the data. Guerrilla tactics work until a hellfire missile finds your precise coordinates from 3 miles up. It's not a fight, it's an erasure. Hell yeah. Let's hope we end those bastards. I saw where Evan Hafer, he was on Rogan a couple years ago, and he was saying if I were part of the cartel and the Delta Force targeted me, I would flee Mexico as soon as humanly possible. Just retire, buy yourself a little grocery store, you know, in remote part of Panama or something, and just get out of there, whatever you have to do. You don't want to be on their bad side. Imagine being an American communist, knowing there's all this cartel violence breaking out all over our neighboring country to the south, and thinking we shouldn't have secure borders. They tell us they're smart and compassionate, but come on. Now that we know the opposite of everything they say is true, they're basically telling us they're not smart and don't have compassion. As I've always said, they lack empathy, which is why they tried to convince us that Biden was empathetic. TDS is a hell of a disease. It leads to suicidal empathy, a phrase that was coined by Gad Saad. And that's it. That's all I've got for you today. As always, I welcome your feedback, and God bless you, listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Bye-bye.